Hi, everyone, and welcome to Women on the Edge of Evolution, awakening our power to co-create our lives and shape our collective future. My name is Paula Dowd, and I'm the Program Director of Feminine Power Global Community, the organization producing this event. I am delighted to welcome you to part 26 in our series today, featuring honored guest Peggy O'Neill to engage the topic, Celebrating Differences in Our World, Embracing Ourselves and Each Other. Before I begin, I want to take a moment to thank all of you for your active participation in this dialogue, both live on the teleseminar last week and also on our Facebook and Gaia groups. We continue to be inspired by the incredible support and enthusiasm that is coming in from all corners of the globe. As of this week, we have over 8,000 members on our Facebook group and a very rich engagement going on in our Gaia community, which continues to grow every day. If you haven't yet jumped into the conversation and would like to connect with other women who are participating in the series, we encourage you to join us. You can find links to both our Facebook and Gaia groups in the confirmation email we sent you for today's call. We also want to thank our event partners and evolutionary sisters, Siona Van Dyke at Gaia Community and Rochelle Marmerstein at The Shift Movie, as well as our 8 co-sponsors for all of their support. If you're joining us for the first time today, the way the call will work is that I will introduce Catherine Woodward Thomas, who is one of the 2 visionary women behind this groundbreaking series, and then she will introduce Peggy and today's call topic and process. Catherine is the co-creator with Claire Zammit of our Feminine Power Transformative Courses designed just for women. Together, they co-lead a global learning community that's dedicated to empowering women to realize their highest potentials and make their greatest contribution. Catherine is a national best-selling author and the co-creator of our Feminine Power Transformative Courses, as well as other transformational teachings that have successfully been used by thousands of people worldwide. She's a highly trained specialist in transformative education with over 15 years of experience designing and facilitating seminars that support the emergence of life-altering shifts in consciousness, both individually and collectively. Catherine's coaching and facilitation integrates her 17 years of training and work as a psychotherapist with over 38 years of spiritual practice and study, and it serves as a powerful bridge between the two disciplines. She is also co-author of the forthcoming book, Feminine Power, Awakening to the Creative Force of Life. So welcome, Catherine, and I know I speak for all of us when I say how much we are looking forward to your dialogue with Peggy today.
Thank you so much, Paula. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Women on the Edge of Evolution. I am Catherine Woodward Thomas. I'm delighted to be with you here again today, this morning, engaging some of the biggest questions that are facing us today as women. What's our role in co-creating the future of our world? How can we awaken our authentic feminine power and our strength? Where should we give our energy, our attention in order to have the greatest impact? And how can we best work together and support each other so fully in this process? So we thank you so much for being with us in this inquiry. And we want you to know how very much we appreciate your interest, your devotion, your love, your intelligence, as we all take on together our collective evolution towards these greater expressions of love and well-being in our world. And for those of you who are eager to connect personally with like-minded others, we invite you to join with us for the free Evolutionary Women's Cafe, which is a facilitated community conversation that we hold after every call on Saturday, so that's 11 o'clock a.m. Pacific time, immediately following this call today. And this is an opportunity for you to engage directly with others who are listening in from all over the world using this brand new technology of Maestro Conference. So with Maestro Conference, we all meet together as a group on the phone, and then we can break into these smaller discussion groups to engage more intimately with each other. So if you're interested in joining us today for that call, please go to your inbox after this call, click on your emails, and you will find a link that's very, very simple on how to register and find your way there. So today, I am so honored and happy to be with an exceptional, beautiful woman, a woman of just deep beauty and dignity, wisdom, and deep, deep heart, Peggy O'Neill. And Peggy is going to be speaking with us about celebrating our differences, or celebrating differences in our world, embracing ourselves and embracing each other. Peggy stands 3 feet 8 inches tall, so she is no stranger to the crippling impacts of outer prejudice and inner insecurity, which are common responses to being somewhat different in our world. And after years of a struggle with her own physical appearance, Peggy had a very powerful spiritual experience that transformed her relationship to her body and urged her towards her vocational career as an author, a life coach, a motivational speaker that promotes the celebration of difference and diversity. So this morning, Peggy is going to share with us her unique insights on how we can all begin to wholeheartedly step into the highest calling of our lives, no matter who we are, no matter what we look like. Peggy is a sought-after speaker, award-winning author, skillful life coach, and featured teacher in the movie The Opus. Peggy is wholeheartedly committed to empowering others and to increasing unity amidst diversity, whether speaking to professionals, women, students, those with disabilities. Peggy shows us really how to break free from whatever is holding us back and keeping us small, to open our hearts and our minds, and to really step into our own magnificence and to walk tall, as she says. So I met Peggy myself about 2 months ago, and the moment I met Peggy, I was smitten, really, actually, with her presence. She has an amazing warmth about her, and she's extended in her heart. She is very available. She's actually generative of what I would say like this deep, rich field of relatedness. And I was really taken with her. And so I am really delighted to be able to introduce her now to you and give her the opportunity to speak to us about rising into our greatness and overcoming our challenges in order to take our rightful place of leadership in the world so that we can together birth that which is seeking to come forward through us in the world today. So Peggy, welcome. I'm honored to have you join us today. Welcome to Women on the Edge of Evolution.
Thank you so much. I think that's probably the nicest introduction I've ever had in my whole life. It was so sweet. I started crying. Thank you.
Well, really, it's nice. So true.
Really nice.
Well, it's nice to hear how we're impacting people, you know, because I know, you know, I mean, that was such a genuine experience that I'm sharing with everybody.
Well, it's also nice to do it with someone who's gifted at the art of articulation, which you are, because people meet me all the time, but they don't have the skill to be able to express their experience so beautifully.
Thank you. That's good. That's great. So, Peggy, I mean, obviously, your expertise on diversity comes through very, very personal experience.
Yes.
Right. So yes. I'm wondering if you can share with us your own personal story of being born with a certain uniqueness to you that led you on a journey, and how you've really used those challenges to kind of awaken your own greatness and contribution to the world.
Well, it's a big question, but I'll see how I can do. If I get off track, you can help me get back.
Okay, sure.
I would say that for anybody who came on a minute or so late, I'm a little person, means I'm 3 feet 8 inches tall, so I'm about the size of a 5-year-old, my height. And I was born into a family of on my father's side of the family right now, we have 300 people, and it wasn't that big 50 years ago when I was born, but I did get born into a large Irish Catholic family, and there were no other little people except for my oldest brother. I have 4 siblings, my brother, then I have 2 sisters who are average size, my parents are average size, and all my other relatives are average size, so the situation only affected my brother and I. My brother is 8 years older than I, and he, I don't know, by the time I got to fourth grade, he went to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really have that much interaction with him. And when I was in grades, like elementary, the beginning school years, he was going to school out way out in the country. He'd leave at 7 a.m. and come home after dinner, and I basically never even saw him. So it wasn't really like I had an ally, and even if it was, we didn't use the words little person, midget, dwarf. We didn't use any words like that in my family. My parents were, by the very enlightened doctors, told to treat us like we were just like everybody else. So while that was great for a certain level of psychology of fitting in and, you know, you can do it and all that kind of stuff, there were some definite special needs that went unmet and unaddressed.
Mm-hmm.
So the other, I think, important thing about my upbringing is that I was born into a prominent family, and image was very important. So, and my parents were both very, I would say, caught in that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very challenging for them to deal with the fact that they had two children that were out of the norm. And I know that they had a lot of challenges with it. And I didn't really know that until I started my own therapy in my mid-30s. So there was, I would say, some good things in my growing up was that I was mainstreamed in schools. I went to camp, regular camp. I was a competitive ice skater. I had pretty much a normal childhood, except for the fact that there were some things that I couldn't do at all. There were a lot of things I couldn't do as well, especially with athletics and sports. And then there were then there was the whole teasing and condescending of there's sort of the general label, spoken, unspoken, pointed at, not pointed at, looked through it with the side of your eye and then have somebody glance at you glance away when you catch them staring at you. Besides, I forgot what I was going to say about that all.
I had
all that going on too.
Yeah, and I just want to comment to you. I mean, it's just so, as you're telling this story, I'm just so deeply aware that as women, as girls,
yes,
know, we kind of have this history, even in our collective, of our value as females has so much to do with our physical appearance.
Our beauty, totally.
Totally, right?
Yes.
And all these ideologies. So as you're forming even identity, I'm just wondering about the impact on your sense of yourself as you
Yeah. Well, it didn't really impact me. I mean, I had a very acute awareness that that other people thought something was wrong with me. And I had but when I got to be a teenager and my friends started dating and I didn't, it became, the whole situation took on a whole new, it was a whole new situation.
Right.
Because sure. I hadn't really been prepared that this was going to be some place where I couldn't run as fast or jump as high. Like, that I pretty much figured out, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in this situation, I didn't really get that I wasn't going to be on an equal playing ground. And so I anticipated, I think my expectation really did me wrong. I expected that my dating life would go as all my friends, and it didn't at all. And so that was really, really hard for me. I always have been very popular. I've been blessed with a personality that people are taken by, and I've always had a lot of friends. I've always been in with popular crowd. I've always been very popular, and with both, you know, guys and women or girls, you know, depending on the age. And when I was in high school, friends started dating and all that. I still had male friends, but, you know, it was just like, we'll go to the party and come home and see you later. And I was never the special person or the person that was done special things for or brought whatever. And it was nice to have friends, but my heart really was, like, thirsty for that thing of being special.
Right.
And so that was really hard, and that continued on through college and into my early adulthood.
And looking back now at it, Peggy, I'm just wondering how this really impacted you in terms of your own sense of what you had to contribute to the world and your own overall sense of valuing your own gifts and greatness.
Yeah, I think that I think that the good thing is that I had a mother who was very motivated to have a good life and was competitive. She was a competitive athlete, and she got me involved in competitive figure skating when I was young, and that turned out to be a very good experience for me. I didn't win every competition, but I won some, and I did well in many. So that was kind of nice to know that there was one thing, there was one sport I could do that I did as well as the other kids.
Right.
And then with her sort of gumption for you can get from life what you want. I mean, this is before motivational speakers and Tony Robbins existed, so she didn't say that directly, but I got that from her modeling. And so I really didn't ever anticipate that what my life was going to be something less. I never really had, I guess when I was a teenager, I did go through, I remember this was a very moving day when I was away at skating camp one summer, and I was with my very, very, very best friend, Allison Ford, and I had a breakdown one day, I don't know around what, but I was like, you know, all I'm going to be able to be when I grow up is a taxi cab driver.
Wow.
And I felt completely like the plug had been totally pulled. It was the first time I think I really faced the fact that I had some significant challenges and obstacles in terms of being able to be in the world, and I was seeing that I wasn't going to be probably married. I wasn't probably going to have children. I wasn't going to be hired to be in a corporation because I didn't possess this particular look. I didn't look like the boy's mother or aunt or sisters, and I didn't look like the other women in the corporation. Mm-hmm. So that was a really poignant moment for me in my life, I remember. And I think that I also had this personality where, you know, cover up the pain, don't let anybody know that, you know, be the one that's happy-go-lucky so people like you. And so that was always going on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some of this other stuff going on the bottom. And as I got older and into my 30s, the stuff underneath started to dominate the stuff on top. And I started to go into a deep depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of that was around my role as a woman because I couldn't establish a long-term love relationship. And I just, every failure I had just set me back, you know, here's one more proof that I'm unlovable, that I don't have any value, and I won't be able to have what other people have. And excuse my French, but God damn it.
Right.
You know, so there was sadness, there was anger, there was resentment. And, of course, as we know, that just created a big cloud around me. And then even if I did find somebody who sort of liked me, nobody could ever be around me that long because I was so nasty.
Yeah. Well, you were just so unhappy. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. There was
built up. Yeah. It's so interesting what you're saying about that you felt that you would not be able to fulfill on these roles, which would have defined your value or defined
mm-hmm.
your womanhood. And particularly, we as women have been so identified with the role of wife.
Yes,
and the
mother.
Role of mother.
Mm-hmm.
And to not be able to believe that one is capable of fulfilling on those roles or whatever, for whatever reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm just aware, too, because Claire and I work with so many women, really thousands of women in our circle, and we hear so many women who are choosing to not go those old roots of marriage and motherhood and feeling called instead to, you know, realize greater potentials in different areas or express their life force in different ways. And there really is this transition that we're all kind of grappling with around waking up to a new identity. This kind of feminine, instead of, as Barbara Mark Seibert calls it, the feminine procreator to the feminine co-creator, where we're all really discovering our role and being able to express beauty into the world and goodness and from the essence and the core of who we are. And it seems to me, Peggy, that you have really found your way there, although I know that you are very happily married to a lovely man today.
Yes, I am.
We're delighted for you.
And not as
too.
Happy as I am. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But can you talk about a little bit about your sense of self? Because I'm really interested in like what you're talking about the sense of self and how the outward appearance ultimately impacts and shapes so for so many of us this core sense of self and what's possible for us and.
who we are. Yeah.
I think that that young women growing up today and little people or any person with a visible disability, they're at a great advantage over people like myself who were born in the mid-50s, where when I got to be in my teens and early 20s, it was only the early 70s, and there weren't, I mean, women went to college, but women didn't really have, not that many women had careers. Hardly, I don't think any of the mothers that I remember when I was growing up had jobs. Mm-hmm. So now it's expanded in what you're saying about this co-creator is that how I like to frame it or how I sort of, when you were saying that, yeah. It's like the door has been opened. There's freedom now. Women have so many opportunities. There's so many possibilities for ways in which women can direct their lives. And for this, you know, we just have to put our head to the ground. It's been a long march. It's been a long haul. And I think as each woman becomes empowered and starts saying no and saying, what are my options, to know to what they don't want to do and always asking the question, what are my options, that many, many, many more doors will open. And then our daughters and their granddaughters will have even more freedom and more possibilities. So
absolutely beautiful.
And I think it's really this transformation of consciousness that's coming in now that you guys are riding the wave of and helping so many women come along with, that this is the transformation that's taking possible, that women are waking up and saying, well, my role in life is not only 2 inches wide, it's actually infinite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the reasons we're so happy to have you is because you had an awakening about your own beauty.
Yes.
And I want you to share that with everyone because I actually think you're like carrying a certain transmission for all of us. And it's so beautiful to be able to articulate this together because I think it's kind of one of those things that just kind of plays on our psyches in the background of our lives, you know, how we're judging and assessing ourselves and we're not measuring up to what we think we're supposed to look like and, the insecurity that's kind of debilitating on a really covert way. So I really want to hear this awakening that you had really.
Yeah.
It's like this grace. So, please.
So I guess I could start back at where I was talking about. I had, you know, resentment, anger, frustration. So one of the greatest gifts that anybody ever gave me was a pillow and a bat. And I guess this is back in the 80s, therapy from the 80s. People aren't using it that much now, but I did pillow punching for months, every day. I just would get on the pillows and scream and yell, I hate you, and punch and just let out my inner monster. And I call it inner monster because I studied with a beautiful teacher named Anna Halperin, who's now in her 90s, who's still dancing. She's a revolutionary dancer from the 60s, actually. And she taught me to do something she called the monster dance, which is to give yourself space to creatively express your pent-up emotions. And she had us draw. She had us write stories. She got us up on the dance floor and told us to go across the dance floor doing what she called the monster dance, which, you know, was a big roaring and saying, you know, the worst things that are possible you could possibly imagine saying to the person who's wronged you or harmed you. And so from her, I learned how to give myself permission to start to give a voice to and start to allow these energies that were not only caught inside of me, but that were pulling me down. They were like rocks on the bottom of my feet.
Mm.
And I couldn't get, it was like shackles, you know. It's like I couldn't get free from all of this negative energy that I had caught inside my body because my mother told me, girls, don't get angry. I mean, we all were taught that, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't have a place. Anyway, so Anna was the first person, and then I met another group of people, Diamond and River Jamison, who I studied with for a year or two. They had a class called their group was called the Alive Tribe, and they taught something called domain shift, and that was where I really got into the pillow punching and stuff. And then I went on to, from there, well, I should probably tell the little piece I told you last night about when I lived in Kona. I was living in paradise. I have 5-acre fruit and flower farm. I had friends living with me there. Every morning I'd wake up and there'd be the smell of, you know, papaya coming in my window and beautiful summer breezes all year long. And it was just very, very idyllic on the outside. But what was happening for me inside was really quite a different thing. And I was waking up in the morning and feeling the breeze and smelling the fragrance of the jasmine and all that. And I would break out in tears. And I would lay in bed and cry because I felt so unlovable. And I felt so despicable. And I just felt incredibly lonely, and I felt like I was never going to be able to connect with anybody. And the voices of I'm alone, I'll never have support, I'll never have love, had just become like these huge overshadowing monsters inside of me. And I couldn't shake them. And probably important for people that are on the call to know that I also had started meditating. I started transcendental meditation when I was 18 years old. I went to the college. I went to Fairfield, Iowa, and studied at Maharishi International University. And I actually had been practicing meditation all this time, and it had helped me tremendously. Wow. It helped me so much. Mm-hmm. However, what I did learn about it was that it didn't really have, it's like, you know, when you have a stain on the counter, you don't just use the bar soap. You have to take the Ajax out.
Mm-hmm.
It was like there was some stress in my nervous system that needed Ajax. And so while I was there in Hawaii and wrestling with all of those demons, a friend came to visit me and invited me to come to a workshop. And I went to the workshop and I had two very, very remarkable experiences. One where I experienced unbounded space, and the teacher, and I said, and I was working with a teacher, and he said, so look behind that thing, and what do you see? And I said, I see unbounded space. It's like the night sky. I feel unbounded. And he said, that's who you are. And when he said that, I said, well, of course, I know that. I've been meditating since I was 18, of course. But it was the first time I experienced it with my eyes open in a group of people where I was interacting, and I also could feel it when he said, that's who you are. It was like the ship had landed.
Wow.
It was like something, I'm not even going to say there was no doubt. It was like complete certainty. It's like, of course, yes, I am that.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that weekend, we did a walking meditation, and I don't remember what happened, but I just had an extraordinary experience of presence and how precious life was and how precious every moment and every breath is. And I said, okay, this is my path. I've had two very significant shifts in my understanding of myself and of life, and I'm going to stay on this path. And so we moved to Boulder, Colorado, and I joined the Diamond Heart School, and I did that for 10 years. About in the middle of that, I was involved in the Fisher-Huffman process, which is a 6-month process where you take a look at the negative experience of your first 14 years of life.
Yeah.
And one night I came in, again, I was given a stack of pillows and a bat, and I was given permission to let out my feelings. And I had been writing, doing a lot of writing over the previous probably 3 or 4 months about my negative experiences with my parents and my siblings and myself and my self-image and all that, and how defeated I felt by that already at that time in life, and how many negative messages I've gotten about myself and something's wrong with me, and how deeply, deeply that was rooted in my consciousness. And so I'm pounding away and yelling and doing all this stuff, and finally, you know, I got out of breath, and after maybe 45 minutes or so, I laid down, I put the bat down, I laid down and put my head on the pillows. And when I closed my eyes and took a deep breath, inside my heart, I saw something that completely changed my life. And what I saw was a diamond. Mm-hmm. This wasn't the kind of diamond that you wear on your finger. It was like a diamond that was bigger than my entire body. And it was completely self-effulgent, means full of light. It was streaming light in every direction. And as I sat there, and I was just completely in awe, I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Words came up inside of me, and like a loudspeaker, I heard, I am a diamond, valuable, precious, beautiful. And in that moment, the shackles broke.
Wow.
And I was free from that self-image that something was wrong with me.
Wow. Wow, what a beautiful, beautiful shift in perception there.
Yes, yes, yes.
And my guess is that you made a decision to empower that opening.
Yes, I did. And I continued with my personal work, and I, you know, continue to this day because it, the self-image of something wrong with me or I'm a failure is still challenged. And believe me, trying to be a business person in the world as a little person, as a woman, is not, it's, there's a lot of, you know, people say they're, I don't know, there's not a, there's not nasty attitude, but I haven't.
Well, a lot of our biases are just so covert.
Yes, exactly. That's a good way to say it.
They're just covert.
Yeah. So it's been challenging for me. And as we know, what we hold inside is what manifests outside. So I know I still I'm not experiencing drinking mint juleps through each day, sitting on my, you know, beachfront property. Not that that's necessarily my goal in life, but doing it once in a while is nice.
Yeah, but I think it's important to, you know, Claire and I lead transformative courses for women, and one of the things that will come up for people when they're thinking about whether or not they are going to come and take a course might be, one of the things I hear from people is, oh, I've done these things before and I have a wonderful experience, this wonderful opening, and then it doesn't last.
Yes, yes.
Right, and so there's a couple of things that we really look at for that. One is, one has to do with a commitment to integration.
Yes.
You know, a commitment to the opening. Yes. So what that's what I'm really hearing in you. I had this opening. I had a transcendent experience. I saw the truth.
Yes.
And it's like you stick your foot in that door, and then you start to effort that consciousness, which is also what I'm hearing from you.
Yes.
And through practice, through decision, through monitoring our consciousness and making sure that we're actually anchored in the truth and not living our lives out of a lie, because how many years did that eat up for all of us, really? The other thing is, I really think that one of our core teaching points that we actually really need each other to reflect the truth of each other.
Yes.
And that too many of us are working alone to do this. I'm wondering, Peggy, if you have a core group of, like an inner circle of other women or some core group of people who are really relating to you and holding for you the deeper truth of who you are as you are for them.
I do, but it's not in a formal kind of thing that we have meetings kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I keep myself well-networked, and I make sure that I have, that I make time and spend time and share time with people who see me that way and who understand my vision and who support me in it.
Beautiful. Yeah, because, though, you know, in terms of creating what we call evolutionary partnerships, it's that the, going from, I think, kind of an old model of, you know, bonding over shared wounds and shared sad stories, and start to find our tribe where we're bonding over our shared vision.
Totally. I mean, that's another shift that's happening with the consciousness that's coming in now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, enough of pity pot. And I know we've spent some time talking about that kind of topic today, but I think it's important to understand that, for me, the power of talking about it today is in helping other people say, well, I remember feeling that way, or even now I feel challenged with those thoughts about myself, and that to know that it's possible to break free, it's possible to let all that be behind you.
Right. Well, and I think it was one stage of our development. I mean, we had to really get connected to the feelings, you know, become conscious of the dynamics that were kind of in the unspoken and the covert ways you felt sabotaged and unsupported, and you know, we're all identifying with your story in our own ways.
Yes,
too.
I'm sure.
But I think the gold of what you're saying is that you broke through the trance of it.
Yes.
And you saw this experience of the deeper truth. Now you're living out of the deeper truth. And now you have a message to the world out of that, which has to do with diversity, and you call it celebrating difference.
Yes.
As opposed to tolerating difference.
Yes.
I'm kind of curious about that. So let's hear about the gold that, like, poured forth out of this painful experience that you yourself walked through.
Well, I just want to reiterate that it wasn't like an instant transformation, although something dramatically changed right away. And within about 2 or 3, I think it was maybe 3 years after that, I did meet my husband, and we were married a year later. And so, but during that 3-year period, there was a lot of what I call washing my heart. I mean, I was really scrubbing, working on trying to become conscious of all the stuff that was in there that was counterproductive or the opposite of this experience that I had of being the diamond. Mm-hmm. And so, and even in my keynote speeches, I talk about how that the challenge of being that diamond is the challenge that I face every moment of every day. It's not like it's a challenge that just, like, I had that experience and, oh, I plugged in and now all of a sudden I'm in this whole other strata. No, it's a challenge that's there all the time.
Right.
And maybe I, you know, get sick and I lose my sense of well-being, or I have a fight with my husband and I lose it, or I make a bad business deal, or I don't get...
somebody behaves poorly, you know, and something... I mean, I just find that there's things that happen that are hurtful and disappointing,
yeah,
setbacks of any kind, and
right,
more susceptible to just dropping into that.
Right.
The first interpretation is very often through that old belief structure.
Yes, yes. And to the degree that we had it instilled as a child, which most of us had some... there's something wrong with you instilled very deeply as a child,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and our existence was not celebrated, it was tolerated, that we can very, very easily go back to the place of no fuel, no power, feeling like we have no options, and all we do is collapse and turn into a big puddle of gunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very sad. And that's why we need our friends, and that's why we need our teachers, and that's why we need our practices.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those are all structures to be able to help us to come to wake up to radical sanity, as we call it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure most people have had this experience of, you know, for me, it's, you know, when I go to bed at night is when... and I'm talking with my husband sitting on the side of the bed, and then I start crying and saying, oh, I'm such a failure. And he's like, let's see how you feel tomorrow.
Deep and, words of wisdom.
Yes.
So in terms of, can you share with us about celebrating difference?
Sure.
Tolerating difference? I'm really curious about that.
Sure. So, yeah, I just sort of was, when I came to diversity, I started hearing this term called tolerating differences, and I was like, what is that? Why would even anybody talk about that? That's just so awful. And then I thought about, like, the Nazi regime and Jews and Christians and people in Ireland and Scotland and Catholics and Christians trying to tolerate each other. And, you know, then I looked around the world and I saw, yes, actually this is something that actually happens and it goes on, and people from different religions tolerate, and in Jerusalem what's going on, and for them tolerating is actually a good place, because usually what they're doing is fighting and warring and struggling.
Yeah.
And so tolerance is like stepping up one level. For a more enlightened society that we live in, I think, and certainly around the, you know, the Declaration of Independence, where all people are considered equal, and to whatever level we've been able to live up to that, we certainly have it as our forefront value that people in our country are created equal, and we do our best to try to treat them that way. So we're not so much, I don't think tolerance is so much, but more around accepting differences. And when somebody comes into your environment who maybe speaks differently or behaves differently or has a physical disability which requires more patience or has a lot of problems, or, you know, on whatever level their difference is, that we are able to take a deep breath and open our hearts and go to a level of saying, okay, this is a human being. I see that they're different than me. Maybe this isn't comfortable right now, but I accept it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the next level where we see somebody who's different than us. Maybe it brings to mind that video I saw once where these kids that have Down syndrome and they're running a race and one of the kids falls down and all of the kids go back and pick her up and make sure that she gets to the finish line.
Where they all went together over the finish line.
Yes, exactly. And to me, that's like, are the teachers of love, kindness, compassion.
Yeah.
These are our teachers. These are our teachers of love and kindness. And even though they can't think the way we think, they can't process information, they can't speak the way that we speak, they can't deal with responsibilities the way that we do, they are the teachers of love. And so focusing on that and seeing and celebrating the beauty that people with differences bring, and somebody who comes from a different culture and their different religion, okay, maybe they believe in a different God or they have different rituals, and the beautifulness, the beauty of that, and just this, it's like, you know, the spices that you put in your food, it adds the variety. It's going in a garden and being able to appreciate all the colors and all the smells and all the differences that exist there. And that's really what it is to celebrate differences. And I think in terms of being a woman, that we need to not only tolerate our difference, accept our difference, but actually to celebrate our difference. And I wholeheartedly believe that every person is given a unique gift, and that when our biggest job in life, and I tell this to, I go to speak at elementary schools a lot, and I tell the kids, your biggest job in life is to find out what your greatness is. Find out what you really love to do. Find out what you're really great at and develop it and become great at it and excel at it and share your gift with the world. That is your biggest job in life.
Love that.
And I feel that message is equally true for any woman of any age. Because of all the, you know, sort of stones that we've had put on our heads.
Well, and this is what's waking up, you know. This is what's waking up in us is inside of, you know, really because of the efforts of so many of our four sisters who really created the freedom for us to be able to collectively together now stand in this inquiry about what does it look like to realize my greatest potentials? What does it look like to make my greatest contribution? Unprecedented in human history.
Right, or just even the question, who am I?
Who am I as a possibility and as a potential?
And who am I? Who am I outside of my role as mother, sister's daughter?
Yeah, exactly. Wife. Definitely a whole shift of identity that's happening for us collectively. And I think that's the excitement, and it's so important to be able to even shift into the consciousness of what you're sharing in really awakening to the profound gift in our uniqueness from each other.
Yeah. So one of the things that happened for me when I realized my diamond, I started to also find out that I had the gift of articulation.
Yes, you do.
I had always been called Chatty Cathy. This is my nickname from my mother. I mean, I've always loved to talk. However, when I talked, I started to expound wisdom, and I started to say things that people were moved by, and people would always come up to me whenever I'd go to a workshop. Without a doubt, at least 5 people would come up to me and say, you asked the exact question I wanted to ask, or your comments in the class are just completely blow me away. They're so amazing. They're so beautiful.
Yeah.
So then I went... how I became a professional speaker is that my friend Marcy Shimoff, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Women's Soul,
mm-hmm.
Mother Soul, Single Soul, Happy for No Reason,
mm-hmm.
she invited me. I told her I was giving a workshop to build my psychotherapy practice, and she invited me. She said, your destiny is to be a professional speaker, Peggy. And when she said that, again, it was like, I am a diamond kind of thing. It was like, I knew that's totally true.
Wow.
And so she invited me to go to the National Speakers Convention with like 2,000 people. I didn't even know speaking was an industry. I didn't even know it was a business. I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know anything about it. I was so alternative at that point. Anything that had to do with corporate, I was just like, turn the other corner.
Wow.
And so she invited me, and I came there, and I was like, you know, I have a story. And because people had commented on my ability to articulate so many times, I thought, you know, I have a story, I have a gift, so this is what I'm going to do. And as I've, somebody saw me speak for 8 minutes once. She came up to me and she said, you have the potential to be a phenomenal speaker. I want to mentor you. She helped me to craft my keynote, my first keynote speech. She taught me how to speak. She taught me how to move on the stage. She taught me how to get up in front of an audience of 3,000 and sustain my power.
Wow.
So that's the gift of recognizing something that you're good at, having your friends support you in it, and then just, you know, calling it in, bringing in the mentors, doing the work, continuing to go to workshops, doing,
being coachable, because you were very coachable.
Yeah, being coachable, that too.
Right. When Marcy said that, she said, wow, okay, what do I do? Right? Instead of went into, no, I can't do it for this reason, that reason.
And the door of possibility opened in my mind. And that's really what we have to do. When people start commenting on our gifts and our strengths and the beauty that comes through us, we really have to allow that. And a lot of us were taught as women and girls that it's not okay to brag. It's not okay to be great. It's not okay to be magnificent. Well, guess what? Those times have passed. And now I think it's really important that we allow ourselves, give ourselves, and a lot of times it's even, you know, we have to give ourselves permission to be great. And this is a big thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
I
talk
give
about this as inner bigness. Can you say
yeah,
that?
In my whole, in my talks, I talk about inner smallness is the thing that holds us back, keeps us down, keeps us small. It's all those voices about, I'm not enough, I can't do it, all that crap. And then there's our inner greatness, which is our true essential self, which is something beyond the personality, beyond our ideas and notions and thoughts and history, something about who we really are as existence itself. And when we start to tap into that, then there's a whole orchestra of beautiful gifts that start to blossom inside of us. I call them divine qualities. And this is really the beginning of the celebration when we start to tap into that essence of who we are on a daily basis through our spiritual practices, through the help of our mentors and coaches and therapists and guides and all of those things. As we start to tap into that more and more, are these qualities, all the beautiful qualities of compassion and understanding and articulation and wisdom and guidance and strength and willpower, all these things start to blossom inside of us, and that's how we become women who stand in our power, women who fulfill their highest potential, women who are a creative force of life.
Gorgeous. Really gorgeous. And I also want to, I'm like really noticing some of the things you said about diversity that I just want to kind of bring out too and put before us. Because one of the things I heard is that, you know, this practice of naming accurately what's happening for us in terms of even the internalized ways that we've internalized messages of devaluing ourselves in some way. But also, I think, you know, devaluing, when we I don't know how we can value others if we're not going to value ourselves.
Oh, well, that's totally true.
Right. So, so we're talking about, you know, if we're looking at a world that's beyond homophobia, beyond racism, beyond classism, where there's this awakening to the value and the sacredness of all human life.
Right.
Which is what I'm hearing in your, as you're describing the celebrating differences, is that where you're standing is like this awakening to the value of human life and
well,
all
yes.
life, really.
Yes, and I would say that it's an awakening to the understanding that there's two ways to do life. There's a way to do life through the ego, and there's a way to do life from your essence. And life of the ego is one that you get on a hamster wheel, and you run, 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 and you try to get fulfilled, and you try to get satisfied, and you try to get content, and you don't, and you don't, and you don't. And then there's a life of essence where you can just sit in your room with your eyes closed, or sit in a jail cell, or sit in the middle of the most beautiful garden, and be completely fulfilled because you're connected to the source of life.
Right.
And when you live life from that place and you make incremental changes in your life, things actually change. But so many, I'm sure we've seen in so many cases in organizations that we've been in that are run by the ego, you know, you move the pieces on the chess table around, but nothing really changes.
Mm-hmm.
And what is necessary now is that women realize that there's a deeper part of them that's beyond their history. There's something inside of them that's called their spirit, their soul, that they can cultivate a connection with, and that they need to take time to practice that every day. And in that, those beautiful qualities start to develop and blossom and grow, and we come to a place where we can be this creative force, because who we really are starts to come out, and it's received because it's authentic, it's pure, it's coming from the source.
Mm, so beautifully spoken.
Thank you.
So let's talk about some of these practices, because I'm sure that there's listeners now who are like, okay, what do I do?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, I'm up for living from essence.
Yes, what does I that think that's like? A good place to go.
Okay. So what are some of the practices you can
there's
observe?
First of all, I could say there's 80 zillion practices on the market. Mm-hmm. And anywhere you go, anywhere you look, you can find some. I can talk about some that have worked really well for me.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them is, I think the first one is making a commitment. A commitment to honoring inner life and the inner essence. And to just giving time and giving space and making it a priority. So for myself, I take 20 to 30 minutes twice a day to sit and just connect with my essence. And I have different things of following my breath. I have a mantra. I have going into my heart and feeling God presence within myself. Those are all practices that I do. And my other favorite one is called remembrance, means remembering who you really are. And I love this one. And it's very simple. It's just taking the name of God and putting it into your heart and saying it to yourself. And you do this sitting comfortably with eyes closed. And as you do, you probably notice that your whole awareness just starts to sink down and your heart starts to open. Mm-hmm. And to just allow that bodily felt sense of deep openness and deep peace and deep connection, mm-hmm. and to start cultivating that. And it starts coming then with you when you get up out of your chair and go into your life. Other practices that I absolutely condone are silencing the critical voice. First of all, you have to pay attention to your inner dialogue. Anytime you hear anything slightly negative, I can't, I shouldn't, I don't think I can, I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not fill in the blank, pretty, smart, cool, groovy, popular, rich, whatever. Whatever word goes in there, just whenever you hear it, stop it. And you can do that by just, you know, I take my foot, I slam it on the floor, I take my hand, I push it out, and I go, stop, or shut up. And I say it with a commanding voice, and sometimes I do it externally if I'm, like, in my car by myself or something so people don't think I'm crazy. Or I just do it internally and stop the voice whenever I hear it. And then come back, take a deep breath, come back to the place of centering, feeling your spine, feeling your heart, feeling your breath. Come into your body. I'm okay. I'm a good person. I'm a whole person. Sensing your wholeness. And then moving forward from there. So that's a very powerful practice. And even when you hear your friends, another thing you can do is support your friends when you hear them saying, I'm not enough in any shape, form, or whatever. I'm not cool enough, rich enough, smart enough, whatever. I have one of my really good friends, Katarina Rondo. Whenever she hears me say anything slightly negative, she says, no negative self-talk, my friend. And it's a beautiful mantra, and whenever she does it, I say to myself, whoops, and I come back to myself. I come back to the beauty of my wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two things, to honor your inner life, have an inner practice. I mean, I also really condone having a teacher, someone that can help you to see how you're getting in your own way. And the psyche is built so that we don't do that. We can't do that by ourselves. So to have a therapist or a spiritual teacher or somebody who actually knows you personally and can see and that you talk to and you can talk about your issues so that they can help you see how you're not seeing who you really are and help you unfold that and bring the light of consciousness in so that the darkness goes away.
Yeah, that's lovely. And you also referred to it as like practices around keeping your heart clean. You call it a clean heart.
Oh, yeah, that's remembrance. When you do that thing, yeah, all those practices, I love that. Did you want to say more? I'm sorry.
Well, no, I loved it too. It resonated for me because it kind of, there's something about it that is the ability to kind of self-reflect in a way that we're not moving into shame.
Yes.
Because I find that one of the things that we find in our teaching a lot, one of the things that gets in the way of our ability to self-reflect in a way that really promotes our growth and evolution has to do with when we make ourselves bad or go into shame and blame.
Yes.
So this clean heart has to do with like purification of motive, really being authentic, searingly authentic about maybe our false motives for going in and behaving the way that we're behaving. You know, we're doing it. It looks like love, but it's really manipulation, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so to be able to keep what you're calling a clean heart and to do kind of this self-examination and then to begin to show up in new ways and maybe make an amends to ourselves and to others and to live in this clean way.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering if you have a certain practice around that, because I just see that as so critical to our growth and evolution.
Yeah. Well, I do Sufi practices, and we have two important practices that we do. One is called remembrance, which is saying the name of God in your heart. And for that, I always just like to make an analogy that the heart is like a window, and inside there's a sun. And when there's mud and gunk on the window, the sun can't go out and the light from outside can't come in. So you're disconnected. And when you do the inner practices, whether it's a mantra or saying the name of God in your heart, which is basically the same thing, that what it does is it starts to wash this mud and gunk off of the window. And so eventually light starts to be able to come out from who you really are. Your authentic self begins to touch other people. You start to feel a real connection with people when you interact with them. And also the light from their hearts starts, and the light that just is in creation, the beauty of creation starts to come in and touch yourself in your heart. And, you know, we grow in our ability to connect, and this is really the most fundamental need that every human being has, is to be able to connect. Mm-hmm. And if we just have so many protections and past hurts and past wounds and traumas stuck inside of us, making this, you know, tar on the window of our heart, life can't touch us. And so many people that, I mean, I've seen in my life go to their deathbed and they haven't had the experience of life really touching them since they were little children.
Mm-hmm.
And that to know now that as adults we can have the experience of life touching us. And I mean, I tell many people that I went from crying every day from sadness to now crying every day from joy, that life touches me so deeply now.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. a possibility for every person. And we just do these practices, and it's like just putting the soap and the Ajax on there and washing and washing and washing.
Mm.
And the other practice that we do as Sufis is called Tawba, which means asking for forgiveness. And it's not like, oh, I'm sorry I took cookies out of the cookie jar or told a lie. It's like, I'm sorry that I didn't see the truth of who I am. And so I hid under this shroud, or I hid behind this man, or I pushed down all my talents and I didn't let the world see who I was because I was afraid of they wouldn't
right.
like it.
And the other part,
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, and because there's an impact on other people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
when we're not ourselves,
that's
right. actually a loss to other people. It's a loss to the world.
Completely.
And to the extent that you and I and all of us together on this call are not being ourselves and realizing our own greatness, is the extent that human, like the possibility of human culture, is not realizing its greatness.
Well, and also creation isn't realizing its potential, its purpose, because what we were put here to do was to realize that greatness,
yes.
to realize that potential,
yes.
to
yes.
experience life in all of its fullness. And the more that we hide and the more that we keep ourselves small and the more that we push ourselves down and tell ourselves all these negative things, then that realization of how precious life is and how amazingly we're connected to everything that exists doesn't ever get to be experienced.
Oh, Peggy, thank you so much. I just want to thank you so much for being such a big part of our wake-up call.
You're welcome.
And for creating this opening, just feeling the opening to really step into that level of essence and aliveness and presence and awakeness from listening to you share about your own experience and how you've really taken that which was most painful and most challenging and turned it into something so beautiful and so good and so noble and
thank
so
you.
True as a gift to offer all of us. I just really, really honor you and thank you and tell you how deeply moved and inspired I am by you.
Oh, you're so sweet. It's such a beautiful thing to hear. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're
and,
welcome.
And I also just want to acknowledge that my, if it weren't for my challenges, I don't think I would be able to have this conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if it weren't for my teachers, and if it weren't for my commitment to claim my birthright, which is to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think all three have been very big players in what has developed into me.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage everybody listening on the phone to, honor your challenges and see them as fertilizer for your growth.
Oh,
seek out the teachers that can bring out the best in you, and also to commit to becoming happy and just keep going until you get there.
Yes, thank you. Definitely join with you in that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we're going to take some questions now and
we're
going to let others into the conversation.
Okay.
So those of you listening, if you have a question for Peggy, just send us your question either on the instant message window of the teleseminar window on your computer there, or you can dial into the conference line. If you're on the phone right now, you just press *2, and that lets us know that you have a question. And before we go to your questions, I just want to have a moment here to tell you about a few things. For those of you who want to find out more about Peggy, you can go to her website, yopeggy.com, yopeggy.com.
Yeah, like, yo, Peggy.
Yo, Peggy.
Yeah.
Okay. And there you're going to find a lot, actually. I've been spending time on your website. You have a lot of wonderful things to read and to look at and all sorts of stuff. But you're also going to find her book, Walking Tall. Can you just say something about your book? And just tell us briefly about your wonderful book there.
We touched on a lot of things that my book talks about today. There's a whole big section about the importance of making healthy choices and guides people to making healthy choices about their attitudes, beliefs, their words, their all kinds of things. And we talk about the power of challenges and how to deal with challenges. Actually, there's a whole section in the book about the monster dance and how important it is to find a way to heal the negative experiences of the past and how to discharge all the negative energy that we're holding inside. There's another part in the book about discovering your essence and how to cultivate that experience. And then the last section of the book is about really stepping into your greatness and bringing that greatness into the world. So there's a lot of really great information, some personal stories of my life, and I think it's a wonderful book. It's about 275 pages, and it has a lot of really great information that can help people with their personal transformation.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, again, that's yopeggy.com, yopeggy.com. And if you'd like to find out more about our work, you can visit femininepower.com, and there on that site is a free 75-minute audio called Awakening the New Feminine Power, How to Become Your Authentic Self and Co-Create the Future of Our World. That's femininepower.com. And each week we also like to shine the light on some of the great work and evolutionary offerings of our event partners and co-sponsors. We are happy to tell you about one of our very beloved co-sponsors, the Agape International Spiritual Center, founded by our dear friend, author of Spiritual Liberation, Michael Beckwith. The Agape International Spiritual Center is a trans-denominational spiritual community whose doors are open to all seekers in search of authentic spirituality,
personal transformation and selfless service to humankind. You can now join the Agape community and hear Reverend Michael live each Wednesday and Sunday by going to their website, www.agapelive.com, and signing up for the live streaming of their weekly sacred services. Those services are live streamed for free.
So and please, if you come to Los Angeles, you must make an arrangement to come to the spiritual center where they have the where you can join in at the experience, which is where you and I met.
That's where we met. We met there. It's a wonderful, wonderful community. Absolutely. Our friends at Integral Enlightenment are pleased to announce the launch of their new online academy for evolutionaries. Registration is still open for their 9-week telecourse, Integral Enlightenment, Awakening to an Evolutionary Relationship to Life. So that course begins on Saturday, April 17th, and you can learn more about that and download a free 75-minute introductory audio seminar at integralenlightenment.com/telecourse. Also, there is a new free online teleseries. It's very similar to Women on the Edge of Evolution, but has men in it as well. Join 18 of today's most inspired spiritual luminaries for a groundbreaking conversation on how you can evolutionize your life and participate in co-creating the future. Presenters include Deepak Chopra, Michael Beckwith, Jean Houston, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Ken Wilber, Brian Swim, Michael Dowd, and Craig Hamilton. Wow. So you can go to evolutionaryspirituality.com to sign up for that series. I also want to mention to all of you who do live in the Bay Area that our own Claire Zammit is going to be speaking on March 15th from 7 to 9:30 on Awakening the Co-Creative Power of the Integral Feminine. And that is going to be at the Shambhala Center at 2177 Bancroft Avenue in Berkeley. So that's through Bay Area Integral. Okay, we're going to open this up for questions. If you have a question for Peggy, please send us your question by the instant message in the teleseminar window on your computer, or you can press *2 if you're on the conference line to just let us know that you have a question, and then wait until I call out your name or your location, and then you will be on the line. So let's see what we have going on here. We have... Claire in New York. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
Hi. You're on with Peggy and Catherine.
Wonderful. Oh, you were so inspiring, both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I am getting anxious because I am actually going into a school on March 25th. It's sort of a poetry day. And I also offered to bring my harp because I play the harp. And they are all excited about it. And they said they're going to have 55 children in the room for 45 minutes, 2 hours in a row, different kids, and they're first, second, and third graders. And I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know if I can hold their attention. They're all different ages.
Yes.
I mean, what you had to say today sounded like it could be really a helpful inspiration. But I don't know if I have poetry that's that, you know, that would reach that age group. I'm kind of on the edge of gaining back some confidence I used to have, and I really want to be able to reach these kids because I believe everything you said. I'm totally into, you know, diversity and unity. And
so, Claire, if you could just, like, actually think of the question that Peggy can answer for you. What is it that you're most needing from her?
I guess it has to do with, it's both reaching out to that age group and coming from my deeper self.
Yeah.
How to kind of match all of that up.
Okay. So I would say, starting with today, do your whatever it is for your spiritual practices, do those to help cultivate that connection to who you really are. That's the best thing that you can do for coming into an audience, to be powerful and authentic and connect with the more you can connect with yourself, the more the audience will feel you connect with them. That's just ground rule. Okay?
Right.
So, because you'll be authentic, there won't be any of that gunk between you and the audience, so they'll feel the connection. And then in terms of being somebody who can successfully pull off a 45-minute presentation for 5 to 10-year-olds, well, I'd say it takes a little practice, but mostly you can know that you need to have a variety of things. Humor works marvelously, however you say that word. And they love humor. You need to change up what you do. So I go, when I do my programs in schools, I have slides. I have interaction with the kids. I ask them questions. I do a little talking. I tell stories. So all of that. And every 2 or 3 minutes, I'm changing it up.
Thank you. That's great.
You're welcome. And, if you can't come up with any of you, I mean, I say you're an infinite reservoir of beautiful poetry, and how much easier to do for kids because you just write it from your heart. You don't have to worry about complicated or being clever. And the other thing is, if you can't come up with anything, there's a zillion wonderful children's books that you can find. And I even have one myself. It's called Little Squarehead. It's on my website. It's about a girl who finds a diamond in her heart. She has a square head. She finds a diamond in her heart, and she's gifted with 3 gifts, which are courage, confidence, and compassion. It has a beautiful message for children about valuing their uniqueness.
Love that. That's wonderful.
Okay.
The other thing I want to add, Claire, is I'm listening to an example of what happens to us. It's exactly what Peggy's been talking about, is our feelings of inadequacy will come up. So here you are, you've stepped out and you've created something that's an offering and a gift. So it's an expansion for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that's coming up is, oh my gosh, I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. In response to the normal, like, oh, I actually don't know how to do this yet. And that always happens when we expand. We never know how to do something. And so whatever that then belief is, that filter, I'm not enough, you don't want to get stopped there. You just want to know, oh, no, it's not that I'm just not enough. What this is I just realized that I've just expanded, and I don't yet have the skills and capacities to feel confidence that this can go well. And probably the lack of feeling secure about it means that I need to ask questions and talk to people who do work with kids.
And practice.
And practice, and have a syllabus and find out a way to engage them and maybe find out a way to present my poetry, but then give them a chance to write their own poetry or whatever emerges. But you do it in collaboration with other people who do know or who can help you to shape it.
Right.
Yes, okay?
I did start doing that. I have other
friends. Well, clearly, because you're here and you raised your hand. So
yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, great. But we wish you blessings on that
Thanks,
day.
Thanks, Peggy and Catherine.
Okay, Claire. Take good care. All right, and let's hear from, is it Shamshed?
Yes, this is me.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm calling from my sister's house. This is her name. My name is Ruka.
Ruka.
I'm blessed to meet you, Peggy, and so thankful that you are yourself. When you are liberated, you really allow us to get liberated. And I learned one thing. I have a problem, when I was young. So I think we all have stories. But the thing is, would you like to share the teacher who prepared you for keynote speaking, please?
Yes, the one I said my mentor came and said, I want to help you.
Yes.
Yes, her name was Pam Gordon, and she works out of Denver, Colorado. She's a teacher of adult learning. That's her area of expertise. And so she also is an awesome keynote speaker, and she taught me the form, and now hitting the ball out of the park every time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Duca. Okay, let's take one of our questions that have come in on the Instant Teleseminar here. Okay, great. From Anna in Pennsylvania. Peggy, you are lovely. Thank you. Can you comment on forgiveness or tolerance of those who are not kind to you? How do we handle those who might be unkind and operate as though they're against us?
Mm-hmm. This is a beautiful question.
Yeah.
And an important question, a very important question. So I actually needed to learn about this because I found that I had a little bit of a short fuse when people stepped in front of me when they didn't see me, and which happens frequently. And I would get my reaction would be out of proportion to the offense. So I really started, I became aware that I needed to address that. And so I engaged, I signed up for a year-long study in nonviolent communication. And actually the name of this particular class was Compassionate Leadership. And I learned about these different ways of communicating that we start to focus on the need, that when you're talking to someone with a problem, you start to help them identify what is the need that they're trying to have met, because that's, I mean, what makes us happy is when needs are met. What makes us unhappy is when needs are not met. And so when we can start to identify in ourselves, oh, I'm unhappy, what is the need that needs to be met, then we can go about getting it met, and then, you know, we have some relief. So when other people do things that are against us, if we can stay connected to ourselves and we can take a deep breath and try to go beyond and be what I call bigger. Get, this is a thing about inner bigness, is if we can get really big inside and to open our heart even when someone is offending us, take a deep breath and look and see what need is trying to be met in them. That this is a way that we can begin to, instead of taking the drawing the sword, going into revenge or striking out, that we can begin to sustain connection and begin to support people who are desperately trying to get needs met in ways that aren't working, in a way that helps them to be able to shift so that they can get those needs met in a way that does work.
That's beautiful, Peggy. And, you know, I often say our work, in response to this question, you know, we really cannot grant to those with a lesser consciousness than ours the power to determine our own.
Yes. Beautiful.
Really, that's a practice.
It is a practice, and it really is that inner bigness thing, because you do, I mean, frequently, outside of my vernacular, which I use with inner bigness and inner smallness a lot, but people say you really have to be bigger than the other person, and you do. And it means having that bigness of heart, because, you know, size matters about a lot of things, but the size of what's inside matters most.
Beautiful. Thank you. Nyla McCarthy from Portland, Oregon has also sent a message to you.
Mm-hmm.
I am the chairperson of the Portland Commission on Disabilities, a cross-disability commission charged with assisting the city of Portland, Oregon, in moving forward towards genuine inclusion.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I appreciate this conversation greatly, but I would appreciate hearing some specific strategies for moving beyond personal awareness as the key. We struggle with the fact that class and economic gaps seem to be the issues which cross-diversity groups, many people we advocate for do not have resources for personal therapy or transformation such as we have focused on today. Do you have ideas on how to move forward? Ideas on how to move that self-directed focus outward on behalf of others in order to help move narratives of differences into genuinely inclusive collaborations? What I'm just hearing Nyla say has to do with, you know, this is a thing for any group, I think, that's been oppressed, is it becomes the kind of the problem of the group that's being oppressed. So in other words, you know, I'm Caucasian myself, but, you know, I'm aware that, you know, in terms of, you know, the prejudice that exists towards minorities like, let's say, the African-American community, somehow is not really the African-Americans community to deal with. It's mine to deal with, right? So it's like until we collectively take on our biases, and I think Nyla's, you know, then it becomes like the burden of the people who are suffering the consequences of it, where it really is reflective of a need for all of us to grow. And I think this is what Nyla's talking about. This is what I'm hearing.
I heard something completely different.
Okay, great.
So, what I heard was, if people don't have the resources to have therapy and work on themselves, how can they? What are some strategies that move outside of the arena of personal transformation in terms of diversity and inclusion?
Yes, that too. I made it much more complex, but that's the real practical question, Nyla.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Okay.
And would you like to address that, or?
Well, I don't know what's happening in Portland, Oregon. I mean, I know that there are many places. There's incredible amounts of resources, of community resources for personal therapy and work that are free. This series, for instance, is a free series. There are many things that are free that people are offering. And certainly when I was in my training period to become a psychotherapist myself, for many years I gave free therapy to people.
Right.
And many people who did not have money. So I'm not sure what the what's happening in Portland. But my guess is it would be to create an alliance with some of the schools and make requests of, you know, being able to set up, you know, structures for people who don't have money and really could benefit from personal therapy or kind of group therapy or whatever people are training to do.
Right.
That's my idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think that 10 years ago that may have been true, but now there's two ways. First, I want to start with, there's two ways to answer the question. The one way to answer the question is, there's no transformation until there is personal transformation. And the other way to talk about it is to say, okay, you can smile, you can be nice, you can make an intention to include, you can make an intention to look at your biases, you can make an intention to look at objectify your fears of people with differences. There are certain ways you can learn to communicate that help you focus on samenesses or the commonalities, which means focusing on the needs of human needs. We all need to be respected. We all need belonging. We all need love. We all need support. There are certain things that, yes, you can do. And I also think that no transformation happens until personal transformation happens. And today with the Internet and with, I mean, you can go to Amazon and buy a book for 97 cents. You know, today there is no excuse for not being able to get the information because it's everywhere. You can go to free lectures. You just have to make a commitment. I think really the real issue there is the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have to say about that.
Right. So, there are resources, even spiritual communities that are offering classes and things like that. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
And just to go back to this other idea that I was, you know, hearing in that, which I think, you know, in her saying genuinely inclusive collaborations, I just really want to encourage all of us to go deeper than the surface and to stop making it people's problems who are the ones who are being kind of the recipients of the biases,
mm-hmm.
because these biases are keeping all of us down, you know, to the extent that we're not awake to the gifts of each other and the value of each other and everyone in our community is the extent that our world is not functioning and not working because we're not accessing our collective resources and be able to really realize these greater potentials that we all need to participate in. So,
And I want to say one more thing, which is that as the washing of the heart goes on, we actually start to access deeper levels. I talk about, and I didn't talk about it today, but that when I do talk about the heart, I talk about that there's four levels of the heart. And the first level is the level of the heart that sees everyone as separate. Mm-hmm. And the second level is a level that starts to see that people actually connect, like two circles instead of being two billiard balls. Actually, the circles start to overlap where there's a separate part and then there's a part in the middle that overlaps where there is actual connection. The third level is a level of merging where you actually experience oneness with another person, which many people experience in romantic love or in their spiritual connection. And the fourth level is where everything actually, the unity of all things, the truth of all things comes to the forefront of one's awareness and the diversity is in the background. So as you clean your heart, you begin to access these deeper levels of the heart. And as you move from seeing, if you see that the world is separate and that you're not connected, then everything that you do to be kind is just out of effort. If you move to the second level of the heart, where you're actually experiencing real connection, then the act of kindness comes from a place within yourself that's quite effortless. And it continues that way through the process until your whole life is just a giving. And this is a life of service, which we know it takes a very high level of consciousness. It's a very clean heart. And so this is why I'm very focused on personal transformation. And only you can do that work. No one can do it for you. Your mother can't do it. Your husband can't do it. Your children can't do it. No one can clean your heart but you. And until you begin to access the part of you that feels connected to life and feels connected to other people, it will always just be acting polite.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Let's go to Joan. We have Joan from New York. Hi, Joan. Hi.
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 It's funny that it says Joan. My name is Alice DePrisco.
It calls you Joan. You come up as Joan. I have the DePrisco, but
hi, Alice.
My mom's name is Joan, so maybe there's a mix-up, but that's
okay,
interesting.
Okay, great. Hi, Alice.
Hi. I really want to thank you for making the feminine power evolutionary this whole thing available. It's so awesome, and it's part of what it's just part of my whole heartbeat, and I'm so grateful that you put it all together. And thank you, Peggy, for being such a dynamic example of transformation and of overcoming challenges that are on the outside and on the inside. My question for Peggy, and also, you know, you always say Claire's name, but I never know your name.
Catherine.
Catherine.
If Peggy mentioned that she had a story and she had a vision and doors began to open, and a lady named Luca asked what your keynote speaker name was, Pam Gordon, and I was wondering, along the same lines, I have done my life's work, and I recently had a huge shift in awakening similar to what you described, Peggy,
mm-hmm.
and I'm on that brink of really wanting to take action, and I'm wondering how do you...
Joan?
What?
We missed you, Joan. You cut out a little bit.
Yeah, how?
Go ahead.
I'm on the brink of, I've had my own personal moment.
Oh. Yes, I heard that. And you want to know how something.
Yes. How do you become a national speaker? How do you get started on the path of manifesting the transformation so that you can serve, be of service to others? Because I'm at that point where, and it's actually been tuning into this program, and making my, and just every single step has been so filled with synchronicity. In fact, this morning to hear Peggy speak, it just answered so many questions because I was wrestling with my self-worth and who do I think I am? How dare I think that I would have something valuable for other women to share with? And mine is around the area of sexual abuse and really wanting to help women around the world to end it. And
beautiful.
So that's where I'm coming from.
So, you know, it's like, I mean, that's a big question. How do I become anything? You know? Not quite as big of a question as how do I become who I really am, but almost, because it involves that to some degree. But there is a, I think I have an article. You can write me at yopeggy.com. You can hit the email and request. I have an article about it. But I would say that you can start by going to your local Toastmasters and practicing speaking. Well, first of all, let's scratch that. First step is make a commitment, make an intention. This is what I want. I want the beauty that's arisen in me to arise in other people, and I can do this through exercising my voice and communicating to other people what's possible for them. So that's first thing. Set your intention and make a commitment to it. And once you do that, it sounds like you already have, because things are, you use the word synchronicity, and whenever synchronicity is involved, it's because you've set a clear intention. So doors start to open. And then if you start to practice just your speaking skill with Toastmasters, they'll tell you how many times you say they'll tell you how to use your hands, how to use your face, when to walk, not to walk. They'll give you the basic things that you need to get up in front of a platform. And then, you know, I started going to National Speakers Association local meetings, national meetings. In those meetings, I learned everything I needed to know about how to be a better speaker and mostly how to run my business. And I learned from other, I got mentors there. I made acquaintances with people who were further along in their career than I was, and I asked them if they would help me, and they did. And I call them up and I ask them questions, and then I went out and started speaking for free at Rotary clubs and at Kiwanis clubs and in schools. And then I started asking for a fee, and now, you know, I'm speaking for thousands of dollars to big audiences and small audiences and corporations, team leaderships, disability awareness, all that stuff.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to just really mark the process, too. And, Alice, a big theme that seems to be emerging in so many of the talks is to do what's next, to take the next step, you know. And I think each of us has kind of an inner knowing. And it's something we have to get tuned into and listen, because if we don't listen for an extended period of time, that voice gets very numb and quiet and kind of almost feels like it's gone away. But the moment we start to turn towards it and listen and then act upon the knowing of just what the next step is, the louder it gets and the more energy is there. And that's when we find that synchronicity starts to come into play. But I think Peggy said it before, you start with a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when we asked before about practices, it's your commitment to honor your own life by bringing forward the greatness that you have within yourself in collaboration with kind of life itself. You didn't say it exactly like that. That was what I heard, Peggy, but it's, I didn't.
No, you said, you speak so beautifully, Kathleen.
Thank you.
So beautifully.
So,
it's like smelling a rose. It's just wonderful.
Thank you.
Every time you speak, I just notice my whole system settles down, my heart opens, and I just feel blessed by your wisdom.
Thank you so
really
much.
Really beautiful.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alice, I'm just excited that you are getting to that place, and I love that you articulated for so many women. There is this conversation, who am I? I don't have enough credentials. I don't have enough education. I don't have enough leverage. And that conversation needs to be, you know, really called out on the carpet for what it is. Who are you?
Well, ask the question, is it true?
Yeah, it's not right. It needs to be challenged.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
It needs to be challenged. It needs to be exposed for the lie that it is. And I just really want to tell you, it's so in the collective of women. That's why I'm glad you raised it. So Alice, we're just lending our, you know, support and applause, and we stand with you and for you in being really bold and courageous and taking the next step to really eradicate sexual abuse for women.
Right on.
And we're with you on it.
Yeah, ma'am.
Okay,
thank you.
Sister.
Thank you so much. And I have made the commitment. I'm. That's why, even just tuning in, I'm committed and I'm going for it. So thank
Yay.
You both.
You're beautiful.
Awesome.
And,
yeah.
And if you, you know, I mean, I think that there's plenty of people around, including myself, that would be willing and happy to coach you and support you and all that stuff. So just start finding those people.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to take you up on that, Peggy.
Okay.
Great, Alice. Take care.
Thanks.
What a rich engagement. I feel like we could go on for a long time, Peggy, but
yes.
We're at the end of our time. We're actually a little bit over.
Okay.
So I just really want to thank you. It's been extraordinary, actually, to be in this rich engagement with you. And for those of you who want to find out more about Peggy and her work and are interested in purchasing her book, Walking Tall, please go to her website.
Or my diamond chocolates.
Or your diamond chocolates.
Yes.
Butter diamond chocolate.
I have gourmet chocolates in the shape of the diamond. And the name of the product is I Am a Diamond, and the subtitle is Because You Are What You Eat. And these are beautiful gifts that I have for you or you to give to your friends that remind you about your beautiful diamond essence.
Gorgeous. Thank you. Okay.
And
great.
They're so yummy. Milk chocolate and dark chocolate.
Okay, good. Thank you. So yopeggy.com, yopeggy.com for her diamond chocolates and or her book, Walking Tall, and a myriad of other things that she's offering on that side. So, Peggy, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're
really,
welcome
really
so much. It was really my honor and pleasure. I just so enjoyed our conversation. And I have one question for you, which I have an answer to. But, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, so Catherine and I met in church. We're sitting next to each other at Agape, and we're singing the songs and moving around and looking at each other going, there's a beautiful light over there. And now that you have spent this time with me sort of in linear time, yeah. I'm just curious if there was something that met your expectation or was outside of your expectation or whether you just was like, yep, that was what I saw.
I love it. So I love the question. What we're focused on with each of our guests really is to find the unique genius in each woman. And you, Peggy, have an extraordinary genius around the transmission of being able to really stand in the deeper truth of who you are, regardless of the challenges and the self-judgments and the judgments of anyone outside of ourselves, and to be able to live your life consistent and congruent with that deeper truth and to continually make the choices that you're making from that truth. And what I saw in you when I met you was this radiance that was coming from you that was so moving to me because your presence was so real and your care. Mm. It was like you were extending a sense of kindness and care
That's
to everybody around you.
That's the thing of washing your heart. I mean, that's my natural. It doesn't take any effort at all.
Yeah.
It just comes from me because I wash my heart every day.
Yes.
Yeah. And
beautiful.
I mean, yeah.
And you said you had an answer to the question.
Well, I feel that I told my husband on the way home from church, because he was sitting in between us, that I said, what an extraordinary woman of light we were with today. Uh-huh. And it's like I know you more in terms of the diversity of you, but when I saw you there, I'm not at all, nothing that you've said has said, oh, I didn't expect her to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like I feel like my intuition was clear, but I enjoy so much being in the waves of who you are in linear time.
Mm-hmm.
In the softness and the beauty and the kindness and the gentleness that comes through you is so enjoyable.
Thank you so much, Peggy. I really received that. Thank you. And thank you for being one of our sisters on the edge of evolution and for...
Well, thank you for seeing me and and recognizing the opportunity. It's one of the greatest honors of my life is to be seen.
Thank you. Amen to that. Amen. Okay, great. So for those of you who are interested in diving deeper into the conversation, I want to remind you that we do have Facebook and Gaia groups where you're able to participate in ongoing discussion forums and stay engaged together with each other. You just go to facebook.com, search for Feminine Power Global Community, or you can click on the link in the email that we sent you this morning. And just want to encourage you to invite your friends to join us in the series. Please forward them one of our emails so that they can come onto the calls with us and engage in the inquiry along with us. And if someone sent you this audio or if you found it in some far-flung corner of the Internet and you'd like to listen to the other compelling dialogues in this series, please visit womenontheedgeofevolution.com. And finally, I want to thank our team at Feminine Power and all of the sponsors who have made this possible, including our event partners, the Gaia Community and the Shift Movie, and our co-sponsors, Integral Enlightenment, iEvolve Global Practice Community, Agape International Spiritual Center, Enlighten Next, Next Step Integral, The First 30 Days, Hub Humanity Unites Brilliance, and The Great Integral Awakening. So please join us on Wednesday for our next Woman on the Edge of Evolution, spiritual leader August Gold, who is a nationally recognized inspirational speaker. She founded a place called the Sacred Center in New York in September of 2001 and has served as its spiritual director for more than 8 years. August Gold is the author of 9 books, including The Prayer Chest, Thank You, God, and For Everything, and the award-winning children's book, Where Does God Live? And August Gold is going to be one of the keynote speakers of the Liberation 2010 conference that's happening here in Los Angeles, April 8th through the 11th. And their mission is to heal homophobia and create equality and freedom for the lesbian and gay community. So we're in wholehearted support of that event. And we are really looking forward to having August Gold with us on Wednesday. I want to encourage all of you to come and sit at her feet. And I also want to remind those of you who are interested in engaging on a deeper level with each other to please join us for the call following this one, the Evolutionary Women's Cafe. That's when we are together for 45 minutes through the brand new technology of Maestro Conference that allows us to meet on the phone as a group and then break into smaller discussion groups and engage with each other. So if you're interested in joining us today for that call, we're going to be meeting in just a few minutes right after this one. You just check your emails, go to the inbox, your inbox this morning, and we have given you a link to register for that call. So until then, everyone, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we are going to unmute the line so we can all say goodbye. Let's hear the sound of women awakening.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha.
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 Yay.
Love everyone.